Don't forget your sweetheart this Valentine's Day. Get great deals at HowieCarshow.com and click on store. We have books, t-shirts, and many great restaurant certificates too. And even gift cards to the Howie Car Show store if you don't know what to buy.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her. I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Grace! Happy Friday. Welcome to the Grace Curley Show. It is Mike Crawford filling in for Grace today. We've got a stacked show, a bunch of guests. Going to be covering all different topics, maybe a little true crime, but some politics too. We're going to kick it off with Boston City Councilor. His father was the mayor of Boston and the ambassador to the Vatican. Welcome to the Grace Curley Show, Boston City Councilor Ed Flynn. How you doing, Ed?
I'm doing well, Mike. It's great to be with you. It's great to be on the Grace Curley Show. Listen to the show often, outstanding program, and glad to be with you and the listeners as well.
Excellent. We got a lot of topics to cover. One of them, obviously, is this cold, the wind and the cold and the snow. How is Boston faring with this snow cleanup and getting ready maybe for another snowstorm? I'm not sure what's happening there. How are things going in the city of Boston there?
It was a large storm, obviously. Our public works team, I thought, did a very good job under very difficult circumstances. There's still more snow on the ground. The rank and file public works team were out in the streets nonstop since the snowstorm started, and before that, actually preparing the roads. They have to sleep. They can only be on the road for a certain amount of time before they need a break. I don't know if it's 16 or 18 hours. But I'm glad the public works team did a good job, but I'm not happy with the management of how the storm was executed. We have had challenges throughout the city with this storm, including transportation-related issues. I rely on the public works officials, and they do very good jobs. I don't think they're supported. I don't think they have the necessary resources. We need to do better on the next storm, put it that way.
Let's hope this one misses us. We'll see what happens here in the Commonwealth with this storm that maybe will hit some of the state on Sunday into Monday. City Councilor Ed Flynn, I wanted to ask you a few different questions, a few different topics.
Sure.
Boston Herald just put out a story that you were quoted in, City Council, more about drama than the docket. What's been going on? Because it looks like there is some type of lack of respect and professionalism within the Boston City Council that's been happening for a number of years. I've been noticing this over several terms here. What is the problem? What's the latest on this?
I agree. It's the professionalism of the members of the City Council. At times, we're embarrassing ourselves, and I don't like to say that publicly. I know some of my City Council colleagues don't like me talking about that. But I do have to be honest with the residents that at times the council has turned into we're not professional, and at times we're not taking this job seriously as we should or as the residents want us to. It's about being professional, being respectful, And we don't need the drama on the Boston City Council. We don't need Boston politics on the Boston City Council. Mike, I grew up in an environment where I worked 24 years in the U.S. Navy. You had to be on time. You had to be professional. You had to be prepared. And that's the environment I'm used to. And I can't have that type of military environment on a city body. But those are some of the qualities I stress: transparency, accountability, responsibility. Respecting your colleagues is a critical part of being an elected official.
Absolutely. Doing your job, too. That's a big one, like you said. Show up on time. Yep, be prepared. That'll get you far in life if you kind of just stick to that.
That was the Patriots' motto: is do your job.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the drama. Don't worry about the politics or the outside noise. Do your job. Show up on time. Be accountable. Be responsible. Mike, when I was in the military, we couldn't be 5 minutes late for a meeting. If we were 5 minutes late for a meeting, we couldn't go into the meeting.
That's right.
Those are the qualities I grew up with, and that are critical. That's how it is throughout throughout the real world. People punch in with the time clock. They're accountable for every minute of their time. And I think us as city elected officials need to demonstrate that same seriousness and professionalism. People call me a dinosaur. They'll say I'm outdated. But that's the only way I can do a job, is giving it 100%. If I was a janitor or a dishwasher, I would want to give 100% and make sure I do the job the best I can. But I don't like to cut corners, and that's what I'm focused on as a city councilor.
I 100% agree. I try to always be early. I probably get in here too early for this show, but hey, it's better to be early than late. And I agree, like most of my sports teams and jobs in the past, if you weren't 5 minutes early, you were late. Never mind
that's
being
right
on time. You need to be there early. I agree 100%. One of the issues that's come up a lot lately is public safety, the state of police reform, Commissioner Cox, his status. He had a meeting with this police officer who was a witness in the Karen Reed trial. It came up. It was kind of very scandalous about the meeting that he held and what he said and what he didn't say and his denials. What is the status of Police Commissioner, Boston Police Commissioner Cox right now?
He is the police commissioner, and I expect he'll be the police commissioner for this year. But just getting back to your question, I do know that, and I didn't follow the Karen Reed trial as closely as other people did, but I was disappointed when the police commissioner said he never heard of the Karen Reed trial, or maybe even implying that he didn't meet with that officer, officer in question. I don't know if he did or if he didn't, but that officer that testified on the stand seemed to say that she, in fact, did meet with the police commissioner, and the police commissioner denied it, basically. So someone wasn't telling the truth. I do think Boston police officers, the O'Keefe family, deserve the truth. And they deserve to know what role the Boston Police Department played during the investigation. What did they do? What did they know? How was the interaction with the Canton Police Department and the district attorneys? And maybe even the FBI were involved in talking with the Boston police.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know what happened, but I do think the residents, and in the interest of justice for the O'Keefe family, I think some of those questions do deserve to be answered. And ignoring them or sweeping them under the rug, I don't think is helpful. I would rather know the truth. I think the O'Keefe family wants to know the truth. I think the residents of the Commonwealth want to know the truth. But it's really about justice for police officer O'Keefe as well. I think he was a young man that was serving our police department with professionalism, and something happened. and this should be an investigation.
Absolutely. Definitely, the police accountability issue keeps coming up. I have a lot of people bringing that to me. One of the questions I heard today that people wanted to ask is, what is the state of police reform in Boston? Because the Civilian Review Board has had complaints about officers, and the officers aren't responding. The Boston Police Department aren't responding. Do you want to say something quickly on that?
Yeah, I'll say something quickly. I went to a meeting recently in Dorchester. It was at the Manlio Building, which is the Massachusetts Association of Law Enforcement Officers of Color. And that was the topic of conversation, I believe it was 2 weeks ago. And they were asking, about the OPAT, which is the Office of Police Accountability. And they asked what the status is and how residents communicate, what the overall job of the that office is. So I do think residents deserve the opportunity to know how their city departments are functioning. And I know some of the people from OPAT are now going into the community explaining issues and explaining what the office does. But I do believe that we do deserve a fair opportunity for residents to fully engage with the office.
Excellent. This is Boston City Councilor Ed Flynn on the phone. We are going to take a quick break. I'm hoping, do we have a few more minutes? Can you come back after the break with us and stick through the break?
Yes, I can, Mike.
Excellent, because I do want to talk about the possibility of an elected Boston School Committee, which the voters wanted, but it hasn't happened yet. So we're going to stick with Boston City Councilor Ed Flynn after the break. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on X at @G_Curley. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back. Mike Crawford filling in for Grace Curley. Happy Friday, everybody. We have Boston City Councilor Ed Flynn on the phone here with us. I have a couple more questions I want to ask him before we let him go, because he's got a Boston City Council meeting today. One of the questions I want to ask is about tax relief, because I know that's been coming up quite a bit for residents of Boston. For property owners, what's going on with tax relief, City Councilor Ed Flynn?
Yeah, it's a good question, Mike. The State Senate played a critical role in supporting the residents of Boston under the leadership of the President, Karen Spilker, and Nick Collins, and Brownsberger as well. But they voted on property tax relief for residents and small businesses. That was passed unanimously at the Senate. I believe the House hasn't taken it up yet, but Boston's Home Rule petition that was passed by the City Council, I didn't support it, but that wasn't that didn't go anywhere. That wasn't passed at the state House. But, Mike, my main point on this is Boston needs to demonstrate fiscal discipline, fiscal responsibility, accountability, and transparency. We can't keep spending and spending and spending. This is taxpayer money. It needs to be accounted for and spent appropriately. And before we raise taxes in the city of Boston, we have to demonstrate that fiscal responsibility. I believe our budget went up about 26% in the last 4 years alone, and we hired significantly, maybe 300 new positions at City Hall. Many of them were public policy or community engagement. But I don't think we can afford to do that, and we have to demonstrate to the residents that we are fiscally responsible, because that's what's needed now when difficult economic times are here. And we had $500 million we received from the federal government during the pandemic relief. We need to account for that money as well. So there's a lot of steps we need to do to demonstrate fiscal responsibility to the residents of Boston.
Who do you think is the issue here? Is it the mayor, Mayor Wu, or the city council, or both not being fiscally responsible?
It's a combination of everybody, all of us. All of us have to own this. But we, as elected officials, can't come into City Hall thinking every program needs to be funded and every program is good. We need to come into City Hall with a pencil and an eraser and start looking at programs that are not working and start looking at spending that increase significantly and make difficult changes, make difficult decisions. We're going to see a major reduction with the Boston Public School Department this year. We spend more money of any school district across the country per pupil, and we have to address that. We have to address the spending. The spending is really what is hurting the city of Boston. The other aspect, Mike, is I know people will disagree with this, but I don't think we're able to continue to work from home much longer in city government and the private sector. The private sector plays a critical role in Boston's economy. But when the private sector is working 3 or 4 days home each week, it does hurt the city significantly. And city employees are also working from home as well. But we have a 25% vacancy rate of offices in downtown Boston, especially in the financial district. At times, it's a ghost town there. So there's a lot we need to do. I asked for a blue ribbon commission to address the economy of Boston. I asked for that for 2 years. Recently, the mayor agreed and developed a new commission to study Boston's economy and revenue. But we're in for a very difficult time, and we have to be prepared to make cuts in spending and programs, unfortunately.
That's the tough thing. Cutting spending is always a difficult thing, which needs to be done. Like you said, it's the city's changed. The way people work has changed. We got maybe one more minute here. I want to ask about this elected Boston School Committee. 80% of voters voted for it. What's going on with it?
There's a proposal by City Councilor Mejia, City Councilor Worrell, to bring back an elected school committee. I support that. And let me say, Mike, to the readers as well, the elected school committee in Boston was abolished under Mayor Flynn. And I want to be transparent about that. But I don't support that decision. I do believe the residents want an elected school committee. They want accountability. They don't know their school committee members. And they want to have some say in decision-making in the Boston school system. And I think they do that through the elected school committee. I'm supporting it. It's about time. Boston's the only city in the Commonwealth that doesn't have an elected school committee. It was voted by the residents 80% to have an elected school committee. Let's listen to the residents. They usually know best.
Thank you so much. That's City Councilor Ed Flynn. Thank you so much for being here answering all our questions. This is Mike Crawford, Grace Curley Show.
Show is on the air.
Welcome back. Mike Crawford filling in for Grace Curley today. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Taylor, what is the poll question today?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is, will Sunday's nor'easter be a bust? We'll get maybe a few inches, but nothing major, or it will rival last week's snowfall.
Oh, I hope it's not going to rival this last week. I'm going to say most will say not, because I think that's what the weather reports are saying, but I don't know. I'm not up to date.
Yeah, there's like three different low-pressure pockets, and depending on which one drops the fastest, that's where the storm will head. But it looks like it's carrying out the sea a little bit more. So 95% right now say we'll maybe get a few inches.
Good. That's what I have my fingers crossed, because I don't think our roofs and decks can handle it. I've been hearing if we get a lot more snow, there could be some issues with...
Yeah, and then all the roofing companies, they go throughout all the neighborhoods and knock on doors and say, oh, your roof doesn't look too good. We had that happen last week, and they didn't know that we just had our roof replaced in October. They said, your roof looks terrible. It's really...
Wrong house.
Just got it done.
Wrong house, bro. They're raking it in.
Oh, they're trying.
Yeah. Well, they better not come to my house. We don't answer the door. We got the Ring cameras. So hopefully we don't have any snow. We have another great guest on the phone. He is the author of a book that I recently have been reading. Very good book called The Rembrandt Heist. He's also someone who ran for Mass State Auditor. He was the GOP nominee on the last election. A great guy. Anthony Amore. How you doing today, Anthony?
Hey, Mike, it's good to hear from you. I love hearing you on this show.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's good. I've liked you for a while. I've had you on my show, The Young Jerks. If people don't know about The Young Jerks, check it out on YouTube and Twitter and all those other places. When you ran for auditor, you did come on the show. And what I really liked is you did help us out with some of the issues that we were covering, and even worked along with the person who did become auditor, who won the election, Diana DeSoglio, who we both like. But you've also written this book recently that I started reading. I couldn't put it down. It's called The Rembrandt Heist, and it's about the life of a master art thief and rock and roll guy, which I like because I'm into the rock music and the local music scene. So it's a very fascinating story about the mafia, about the subject, which is Miles Connor, but it's also about rock and roll, local music as well. And maybe some other things that I don't know as much about, which is art, which you're an expert in. I love this book. Tell us about the Rembrandt Heist.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. You know, before I do, I want to mention people really should check out The Young Jerks. It's one of the great, first of all, it's one of the great names for a show in history. And you're one of the few people that was willing to have a Republican on your show, which was refreshing. So I thank you for that. So thank you for reading the book. The book is about, as you said, Miles Connor. And, you know, he had this long career in art theft. He robbed over 30 museums. No one's ever done what he's done, especially in terms of the value of the things he stole. And, of course, he's from Massachusetts. I always say most of the bad criminals in crime have some connection to our state, whether they be politicians or they be career criminals. I guess there's a thin line between the two. But Miles is just a fascinating guy. And when he wasn't stealing things, he was dominating the local rock and roll scene. So I enjoy that too. And I loved hearing and learning about that. And mostly I loved writing about it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And it's interesting too, because it's about two friends. One who is more of a straight and narrow, a guy like me who's doesn't do anything wrong, plays life the right way, let's say. And his friend is Miles Connor. And at one point, he's a rock producer. He's got a big show booked with Miles and Sha-na-na. But Miles is getting busted by the feds and the cops. The sirens go driving by the rock club. And his friend knows it right away that they're coming for Miles. It's a hilarious scene where he's like, well, I don't think Miles is going to be making the concert tonight.
And Isn't that great? It's one of my favorite stories.
Yeah, it's just so many stories like that in this book. And then you have the big scene where Miles and his crew of kind of mafia guys or, you know, local hoodlums, criminals, his crew, they walk into the Museum of Fine Arts while it's open, daylight robbery, and they steal a Rembrandt right off the wall. And it's just a wild scene, the whole thing.
I mean, were you shocked when you compiled this and just kind of, you know, wrote down about his life story? Because to me, it's a wild, you almost can't believe what he did.
I was shocked. You know, and I study this stuff. I've been studying it for decades. And what really shocked me is not just the plan to steal it to get out of trouble, which people can read about, but there's never been a heist that I'm aware of, and I've looked at thousands, literally, that is so well planned, starting from the night before right through to how the painting is returned. The planning is just incredibly intricate and makes sense because Miles is a Mensa member. So in all these crazy things he was doing, he's also a genius. And only he could come up with a plan like the one he did. And I'm glad you mentioned his friend Al, because a lot of people know Al. He's in the New England Music Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and produced some of the biggest concerts people have ever seen. You know, he would do the sound and organize the tour, that sort of thing. And he was with Dionne Warwick when Dionne Warwick was like Taylor Swift of her day. He was with Sinatra and a whole host of rock bands. You, Mike, you probably noticed that he was driving an RV for the Rolling Stones to a show when they got the tongue logo. You know,
the famous tongue sticking out. Yes.
Yeah, he was with them when they got that and were like, whoa, this is a really cool piece of art. They were with Al. He was driving them. So, I mean, the guy's career is just phenomenal. And these two together, the story is something I had to write.
Yeah, it's like two best friends. It's kind of their life story. It's very interesting. Where is Miles Connor now?
Miles lives in Rhode Island. He's a free man. I see him very often. In fact, February 1st is his birthday, so I'm going to take him out for lunch. But he's just an entertaining guy to be around. He'll be 83 on the 1st, but his wit is super sharp, and his memory for things that matter to him is incredible. You know, if you remind him of something, he can tell you stories about it in granular detail. You just have to prod him, and then he remembers everything. It's remarkable.
It's a remarkable story. I suggest if people are interested in this, buy the book. The Rembrandt Heist is the name of the book. I was riveted. When I started reading this book, I just couldn't put it down. I spent a whole night. I got through two-thirds of it in the first night. It was that type of book. It's especially if you're like a local guy, a Boston guy from Massachusetts, you definitely want to check this book out. It's a great book.
Thank you, Mike.
And where can people buy the book?
It's available everywhere. You know, obviously the easiest is Amazon, but, you know, most of us have a local bookstore. It's always good to support the brick and mortar, keep them in business. So, you know, anywhere that you think to yourself, hey, I want to buy a book, they'll have it, and you can purchase it there.
Beautiful. Yeah, I like I said, I really like the book for the local crime. You get into the mafia stuff, the culture in Boston back, you know, back in the day in the 70s, which was totally different. There was quite a bit of crime, quite a bit of corruption. Not that there still isn't, but it was a different time back then, and people do remember. Anthony, I do want to keep you over. Do you mind sticking through the break? Because I want to ask you about this Mass governor's race. There's three candidates for governor on the Republican side. Yes?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Yeah, please.
Excellent. So this is Anthony Maury. He's an author. Check out his book. He's the author of The Rembrandt Heist. This is Mike Crawford filling in on The Grace Curley Show.
Watch the show live. Rumble.com/The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Wow, happy Friday. Some chill music here, Taylor. I like it. It's Mike Crawford filling in for Grace Curley today. We have a great guest on the line right now, Anthony Amore. He's the author of The Rembrandt Heist. He's also a well-known local Republican who ran for Mass State Auditor the most recent cycle. And I believe he did the best out of all the Republican statewide candidates the last election. So I definitely want to ask him some questions about this governor's race that is starting to heat up a little bit. There are three Republican candidates right now, Mike Keneally, Mike Minogue, and Brian Shortsleeve. And obviously, Mara Healey is running for re-election. Unfortunately, I think she is going to be in a strong position because of Trump. I think she uses him to kind of not focus on any of the issues that are really plaguing the Commonwealth. She just kind of pushes everything to Trump. What do you think, Anthony? What's going on with this mass governor's race and local politics right now?
Local politics, as it always has, just leaves me scratching my head. I tweeted something about it today, Mike. I was saying, you know, I look at the electeds across the state, and I just wonder if democracy even works. I mean, we just have I can't even believe the people that are in office get elected and reelected. Their only agenda is getting reelected. They don't produce anything. You got Ed Markey, who's been in there for almost 50 years without any real accomplishment. But in the governor's race, you know, Mike Minogue, Mike Keneally, Brian Shortsleeve, all three tremendous guys. They are really good guys, too. I know each of them. They're good men. They're not, you know, they don't have huge egos. They just want to serve. They're decent guys, and people would like them if they met them, and I hope they do. But Mara Healey is just so hard to beat, and she always has been, and it's puzzling to me because I don't know why. I don't know. I can't name one thing she's ever accomplished in her life except a lot of lawsuits against Donald Trump as AG. We know she likes basketball because she always has a basketball in her hands. I don't get it. I frankly don't get it. I think she's the presumptive favorite in the upcoming election. Her record as governor so far has been abysmal. There's nothing good to point to. It's just remarkable to me. I look at it and I'm stunned.
Yeah, the incumbents always win. They always win the re-election unless they do something scandalous, especially in Massachusetts, especially in the Commonwealth. And I think that's just the obvious thing that's going to happen here, unfortunately, because I want to see the issues get brought up. There are a lot of issues that aren't being dealt with, I feel like, in the Commonwealth, whether it's corruption or the cost of living or the fact that so many families are moving out of state because they can't afford the housing or the taxes or the commute. You know, just there's a lot of reasons why people are moving out of the state. I think the best person that could actually possibly defeat her isn't going to run, which is Diana Zizoglio, Mass State Auditor, because she knows she's probably not going to win either if she challenges her in the primary. And I just think that's the unfortunate state of politics, is once you win, it's almost impossible for anybody else to challenge you and remove you from office unless you really make a big mistake. Which of these guys?
But this state is just riddled. It's a one-party state, has been forever, will continue to be. They have the money-raising machine to stay in office. They have the unions have them completely in their pockets with money. There's one Democrat in the entire state that cares at all about transparency, and that's Diana Zizoglio. And look at how she's treated by her own party. I think Diana should come out and endorse one of the Republican candidates. I mean, Mara Healey treats her horribly. The attorney general treats her just as bad. They don't like her. They will not succumb to the audit that we voted for. I think Diana should, the Republican side, all three candidates support the audit. They support her. She should come out and endorse one of them. I think that'd be the smartest move. That's probably the only thing that could tip the scales for our side. It's just a horrible state of affairs in Massachusetts. You said, short of a scandal, even if there's a scandal, it doesn't matter. There's all kinds of scandals that that Democrats in Massachusetts have overcome. There was this, you know, dating back from Chappaquiddick to the present day. It doesn't matter. It's just a machine. They're not accountable to the people. They're accountable to whoever is donating the most money to them.
You have a point. It's really hard not to be reelected as a Democrat. It's just the way it is. And, you know, out of these guys, the Brian Shortsleeves, the Mike Minogue, Mike Keneally, do you see any differences among them that would, you know, that you'd favor one over the other? You said you liked all three of them. Is there any one of them that kind of stands out that you think is the best candidate out of the three?
I think they all have significant strengths that you can point to. You know, I really do. I think they've all been successful in the private sector. I think that they're all very personable, and I know that they care. It's hard for me to pick one above the other. But I just, again, I'm sorry to beat a dead horse here, but I drive on 93 every day, and I see the IBEW with their billboards of whoever the Democrat is running. And I think to myself, the members are putting tons of money into the pockets of these Democratic politicians. And the members aren't Democrats. The guys that are out working, the electrical workers, they're not Democrats. They don't care about any of the agenda. They just know that these people are reliable in their corner. And it's just a machine that I don't know can be beaten. It really worries me for the Commonwealth. You know, one party state on either side is a horrible thing. But that's what we have. I'm hoping that one of the three can emerge, take on Maura Healey. They'll slaughter her in a debate, any one of them. But will it matter? I don't know.
Yeah, will she actually debate them either, too? I mean, that's the other thing. A lot of times the incumbents don't even debate, or if they do, it's one and done, you know?
I like Diana, but even when I ran against her, she's a Democrat. I got a 10-minute debate on a Sunday morning. There's no point.
That's right.
There's just no point.
Yeah, we tried to. We were trying to get you both on the show together to have some type of debate, and that never worked out. That was
no. The debate doesn't matter. Maura Healey's got nothing to run on. I don't know why she would debate. She's got nothing to defend herself on. She'll mention Donald Trump 7,000
times.
That's
it. I mean, don't you feel like the Trump thing helps her in a way? Because I feel like, especially with ICE, because she'll frame it, they're invading our state. It's almost like when a president, you know, like George Bush, when 9/11 happened, he was not a popular president. At that point, 9/11 happened. All of a sudden, his popularity went through the roof. It kind of feels the same thing. She uses Trump like that, like he's a foreign adversary. We got to defend against Trump, and it works with a lot of people. Do you feel like that?
Oh, shit. That's why. Oh, yeah. That's why when she was Attorney General, the only thing she did was sue Donald Trump every month. I mean, that's her only accomplishment. I don't know where it got us, but even with this ICE thing, it's just for attention in getting the Democratic donors, because Mike, I worked for the Immigration Service in law enforcement. ICE deportation officers have been doing the same job for over 100 years. They were doing it at the same level as when Barack Obama was president, but now Donald Trump's in office, they're suddenly Nazis.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That's Anthony Amore. This is Mike Crawford, Grace Curley Show.